Thank you very much for this kind invitation. Now, you just heard a talk about the material properties and how to think about the materials involved in organic solar cells. Now, I'm an electrical engineer, and one of the great things about organic solar cells that you can think about the problem in different length scales. You can think about it in a molecular length scale or atomic length scale, or you can think about in a little larger length scale. And that, because I started just 2 years ago on this, I didn't know much, so I started from a different place, and hopefully that is something you'll find interesting. Now, of course, most of the work is always done by the students, and in particular, Bishwajit Ray, he has done many of the things that I'll be showing you today. And of course, I have a long list of very distinguished collaborators, Tobin Marks from Northwestern, Mark Lundstrom on theory, Edwin Garcia on material computation, and Charles Brack, who is also an experimentalist I will discuss these results. Now, as you know, just to get started in case you are not an expert like me, that when you think about a solar cell, generally it's typically a PN junction, like a single crystalline silicon solar cell. 80% of the market is dominated by single crystalline solar cells, and what you have is essentially a two layers, P and N. And when the sunlight comes in, then electron hole pairs are generated, and these electron hole pairs will be generated. They will diffuse around, and in organic solar cells, generally, when it reaches the junction, then these electrons and holes are separated, and once the electrons and holes go to the respective contacts, then, of course, you have the current coming out of the solar cell. So this is the basic idea. Now, organic solar cell is a little different than a single crystalline normal solar cell, and for a very important reason. And the reason is that because these organic solar cells have polymer materials, one-dimensional chains, therefore, they have very strong excitant binding. And if you don't pull them out within a few nanometers, then they will recombine. So the first problem in organic solar cells is to pull them out. That doesn't happen in single crystalline solar cells, which is three-dimensional, lower excitant binding energy. So you don't worry about that recombination being happening very quickly. So what is the solution? So one thing is that you realize that if you make a solar cell like this, this is not really going to work very well, because only the exciton hole pair generated within a diffusion length, they will be taken out. Now, of course, there is two solutions. One is a physics solution. So you say that, okay, I'm going to make the exciton lifetime longer. I'll try to engineer it such a way that it doesn't recombine very fast. That way you could collect a lot of excitons, separate them, without really losing a lot of sunlight-generated electron hole pair. The other is the engineering solution, that why don't you then, instead of making this thick, just make it thin. But this is the engineering problem, that if you make it very thin, it's a 10 nanometer, let's say, the diffusion length, and when you want to have a solar cell which is like this table, let's say, the non-uniformity will be such that sooner or later there will be a point where there will be a short, and because of thickness non-uniformity. And if you have a short, of course the solar cell is dead. So you cannot do that. The engineering one doesn't work, and the physics one is very difficult. So the chemistry route is what actually solves this problem. And this is, as an engineer, one of the most elegant ideas I have seen in terms of device physics. So what people do is that instead of having a bilayer where you lose a lot of excitons, why don't you, the chemists flip it around, and they say, if the excitons are finding it difficult to go to the interface, why don't you bring the interface close to the excitons? It's like, you know, there's a Muhammad, if it doesn't go to the mountains, why don't the mountain come to Muhammad, or the other way around? So this is the basic idea, that you essentially take two materials, and then essentially mix them so well that no matter where an exciton is generated, it immediately finds a surface very close by. And that, of course, immediately will dissociate exciton-hole pair. In many of these, in a 1 centimeter cube area, you may have 100 meters squared of equivalent surface area embedded in that little volume. This is how much surface area has enhanced, and therefore you pull out every exciton that has been generated, more or less. These days, people can get almost 100% efficiency out of this dissociation process. And this is in 3D, remember, that what you're saying, what I show here, this is a computational results from our group, but this is really one phase, and what you show, see here in the black, that's really the another phase will get inside it. And you can immediately see that this is going to be a percolation problem. And as well as this will be a problem where the electrons will essentially try have to find the corresponding interface. So I want to tell you how to think about these horrendous interfaces and horrendous problems in a way that you can do in the back of the envelope. That's what my goal of today's talk is. Now, of course, the reason I said that we wanted to go through computation, because if you go through the chemistry route, then, of course, you need a lot of graduate students and a lot of hard work, and we do not have as many graduate students. So this would be, of course, a challenge, as I said. And so I'd like to tell you how to think about random structures in a very elemental and simple way. So this is what our model is, that you start with two blends. Here, red should be one of those PCBM, and the blue, color doesn't really mean anything, P3HT, let's say. And you put them, anneal them at a particular temperature, 120 degrees, say, for a couple of minutes, and people do it trial and error, then find the maximum efficiency, and at that point, the student is ready to graduate, and then you have developed a cell. But you see, this problem can be analytically or modeled. And you can see this should run automatically. This is how the phase segregation proceeds. If you were to go inside and look at this, let me try it one more time. So let's say you start with a very good blend, oil and water together, intermix completely. And then you put a little bit of heat, that's the anneal, for a couple of minutes, and then what's going to happen, these two phases are going to segregate. And when they segregate, one thing you begin to notice that these regions is getting larger. That is what she was mentioning a little bit ago, that this phase segregation, when she anneals it, essentially they go to pure phases. So this is the bigger pure phases. Now it turns out that this is a very easy problem to model. This is something chemical engineers and chemists have known for a long time. And all you have to do is to use something called the Kahn-Hillard equation. And I'm not going to go into the details. You know, these are easy things. You can find it in textbooks. And the basic thing is that if you start with a well-mixed structure, if you start with a well-mixed structure, which is shown here on the top, so that if you take randomly at any point, then you have 50-50 chance of finding a blue or red. So that's where you get started. And then if you anneal it, because the way the free energy and the surface tension, the way the energy of mixture, the way it works, something relatively easy to model, then what happens that either you go to one phase, choose one phase, or you choose another phase. That is, that if you randomly choose one point, this will have equilibrium concentration either due to the white, or it could randomly have the other phase, which is due to the black. So this will phase segregate as a function of time. And one of the beautiful results of this theory is that this problem is not only analytically solvable, this has a power law exponent that we'll see is actually extremely useful. This is how it works. So if you solve this, if you solve that problem, and looked at how this is evolving as a function of time. Remember, I'm annealing it at a constant temperature, and these things are getting bigger as a function of time. And if I just look at how they are getting bigger as a function of anneal time, I'm sorry, the x-axis is time, and the y-axis is the W, how larger it's getting, in a log-log plot, it is a straight line. And this is a very well-known result, that as you anneal it, as a function of time, when the phase segregation continues, it moves as a power law. And the power law is Ostwald ripening. And this has a power law of 1/3 or 1/4, depending on the polymer pair that you choose. Okay. And of course, experimentally, you can take a look. This is a recent paper, relatively recent paper. You can do electron tomography and find out that essentially this is exactly how this phase segregation actually proceeds. Everything I'm showing here in 2D is actually a three-dimensional simulation. I'm just showing a two-dimensional cut of it. Now, this is very important. You see, the domain size, the width of these regions, are growing as t to the power some n, this t to the power 1/3, let's say. Now, let's think about the exciton problem. You have just finished the process model. You have just created a structure after 2 minutes of annealing or 3 minutes of annealing at a given temperature. You have a structure. Now you want to know that when the sunlight comes in, generates electron-hole pair in exciton, how many of those excitons are you going to collect? Very simple. That's how it works. So the way it's going to work is first you can do it in computer. You can just put it in a computer, in a big supercomputer, and ask it to solve the problem. And look at this, how the exciton has been generated. Remember, one phase generally absorbs light, the other phase doesn't. And what you just saw here, let me try one more time, that what you will see that in one phase I have put a pulse of light, lots of exciton have been generated, and you will see that they are disappearing as they are finding the junction or self-recombining. And those, of course, once they get phase separated, then they will find their respective contacts, and they will go to the respective anode or cathode, depending on where they want to be. So this is how you can see that they are being lost, and eventually, because it was a pulse, not a continuous sunlight, that's why everything disappeared. Of course, in sunlight, this process will be continuous, and electron hole separation will continue. Now, this is good. It takes a day in a big machine. And of course, then at the end of the day, you realize that every time you make something, you have to go and ask a friend who is very good at computer, which is not, of course, always acceptable. So let's do it something very simple. Let's look at the structure in the early phase in the anneal, and a little later, and a little later. And I told you that this blue regions, width of these blue regions, is going as t to the power 1/3. Ta means anneal time. This is going as a power law, going to the 1/3. Now, when I look at this structure, it looks to me as if somebody has accidentally mixed up a pair of noodles, red color noodle and blue color noodle. Accidentally, they have mixed it up. But simply because somebody has accidentally mixed it up, I don't have to keep it mixed. Because, you see, for an exciton who is born here in the red, it really doesn't know about the global complexity of the structure. It doesn't care. It only will look for a local interface in here, and the only thing it knows about is a local structure. It doesn't know about the global structure. And as a result, you see, it's like a fly, that a fly doesn't care which lives and dies within 30 meters of where it's born. It doesn't really care whether there's a Himalaya somewhere else in the world. So, therefore, you can easily do this transform. You can pull them up. Now, you realize that if you pull them up, you are doing this transform in the particular way. Remember, let's say that blue and red is 50-50, as she mentioned, 50%, 50%. And in that case, and as this is evolving, nothing is evaporating. So the phase area must be conserved. Now, I just told you that width of this region moves as t to the power 1/3. So can I not immediately calculate the total surface area and how it will evolve as a function of time? Of course I can. Because this area, length multiplied by W, that must be A over 2 if it is 50-50. If it is not 50-50, it's 1/3, 2/3, then you will put the corresponding factor in here. But this length scale, look at this complicated area. In 1 second, you immediately found what the surface area you just created by annealing and how the surface area is changing as a function of time. And so, therefore, if the length or the effective surface area, what will happen as a function of as you anneal it, these are getting coarser, and as a result, the effective surface area will decrease as a function of time. Okay. So this is my argument that you can do it in 2 minutes in the back of the envelope. Now, of course, back of the envelope, if you do it, nobody will believe you. So, of course, you have to go and put it, make the computer work very hard. And once you make the computer very hard, and in each case, as I showed you before, you have to get the electron hole separated and then see what fraction of it actually got separated as a function of an ill time. And what you see here is actually the corresponding numerical simulation, and which is what t to the power 1/3. You see, it's a log plot, so this is a t to the power 1/3. Exactly, should match is exactly as it should. I mean, this is the physics is actually very basic, so there's nothing to worry about. Now you realize that in order to calculate the current, what we have to do is only square root this diffusion length of these regions, the phase. That is how many excitons you are going to collect. Rest of them will self-recombine and go away. So therefore, you can easily calculate the current. This is the total amount of charge within that volume. And in order to compute the current, you divide charge divided by the exciton lifetime. And immediately, that's what I said, that this curve, t to the power 1/3, is exactly the same that you'll get from lots of numerical calculation. The other one will take 10 days of running 100 node machines. Okay, so this is exciton current. We can easily calculate. Now look at this, there's immediately a big problem you see, right? If this is really the curve, why should you anneal? Because annealing is making the surface area small, and if it makes the surface area small, then you're getting less and less excitons. So why should you anneal at all? Right? Because you are actually hurting your performance. Your short circuit current is going down. The reason you will do it is because of the following. Because when I transform something from here to here, this was good for excitons, because exciton only cares about local structure. But once they have been separated into electron and hole, then, of course, local structure is no longer relevant. What they need for this electron that has just been separated, this yellow electron, it now needs to find its path through this maze to their contacts. So now it's a global problem. For the separated electron hole, it's a global problem. It's a percolation problem. And that immediately tells you that this transform is great for excitons. But once the exciton has been separated, then, of course, you are thinking about electron and hole in a global context. And all the recombination that will occur as the respective electron and hole are trying to get out, but has gotten trapped into local ponds and cannot really get out to the contacts that they really want to be. So if you do this modeling, by the way, this is the same curve as before, but instead of the log plot, I have plotted in a linear plot. That's why the t to the power 1/3 looks a little different. And as I said, that the current is actually going down as a function of annealing. But what you find that the current, the resistance for an electron to get out, goes in the opposite direction, because here there are lots of puddles, lots of isolated islands where the electron can go in, but they cannot get out. So for those electrons, the resistance is infinity, because it's not percolating yet. This is finite size percolation. It's not percolating yet, so therefore they think this resistance is infinite. As the width of the conductors are getting bigger, and as they can percolate through this and get to the respective contacts, the resistance is going up. Resistance is going down very rapidly. So therefore, there exists a optimum. And that's what the graduate students try to find. So you have this type of optimum where this part reflects the connectivity, the percolation. This part reflects the loss of exciton. And if you look at the experimental data from different groups, sorry, the references didn't come about. If you look at it, you'll exactly find that is how this peak comes about. Right? So this is essentially how these solar cells are optimized and their performance can be evaluated. So good. So if we understand how solar cell now works, we can immediately put some constraints which you cannot beat very easily. You can try various ways, but chemists, physics, whatever, but you cannot beat very easily because these are fundamental physical constraints. The first one is that why the ratio has to be 1:1, and that's what the question I was asking. The ratio has to be close to 1:1 because in three dimension, percolation threshold is 33%. That unless a phase is at least 33%, then it cannot go from one point to another in a continuous way. Right? And so therefore, you see, you immediately get into this trouble that as you go away from this 50-50 ratio, what is going to happen that the other phase is going to get trapped. This again, all these numerical simulation based on Cahn-Hilliard equations. And the other phase is going to be trapped within the bigger phase, the dominant phase. The minorities will be in the enclaves, in the sea of the majority phase. And as a result, what happens that, yes, you can, if you try to make your absorption a little bit higher by increasing the phase that can absorb light more, what you lose is the corresponding other phase will not be able to carry their respective electrons or holes to the contact. And another problem is that it will have huge fluctuation because the other phase is trapped. And even when it can percolate, remember, at percolation, the path is actually very tenuous. There are only the big islands connected by very small pathways. That's at the percolation threshold. So one of them gets broken, immediately your performance gets bigger. Performance is lost. So from cell to cell to cell, you will have extreme variability in terms of performance. So as a result, it's very difficult to bid one-to-one. People, many times you will see in the literature, they say 5-to-1, 4-to-1. They are talking about weight ratio. If you convert to volume ratio universally across all the papers that has been published, it's always 1-to-1, on that order. 1-to-1 may be a little bit over this way, but there's nothing that is other than that. So this is the part, if you view from percolation theory, it's obvious that why it has to be the case. Now let's talk about reliability, that why organic solar cell is so difficult and why it will continue to remain difficult. Because the same thing that makes organic solar cells good, easily processable, also makes it bad. And this is the same. This is what I want to explain to you. Assume that you have processed the solar cell at 120 degrees for 1,000 seconds, 10, 15 minutes, and you have gotten the optimum structure. Now, of course, when you put it in operation, when you put it in Arizona, the solar cell keeps thinking that it's still inside the oven. And when you put it in Alaska, it's a little bit lower oven, but it is an oven nonetheless because the difference between process temperature and the operation temperature is not very big. So when the phase segregation was happening at 120 degrees, of course, 15 minutes. Now you put it in Arizona, then it is going to, you are going to look for it, going to operate it for months at a time. The T to the power 1/3, that will continue to happen. The phase segregation will continue to happen. And once that happens, of course, you are going to lose the performance of the solar cell because you no longer are at the optimum point. So these are at various temperature. Let's say it's Arizona of some sort. This is Arizona, let's say. This is Alaska. And so you can correspondingly do the simulation, and you can show that the cluster size, how they will grow as a function of operating temperature. And then these are the experimental results. These are the experimental results of how the short circuit current is lost when you put things and you stress it at a given amount of temperature. Remember, in silicon, you cannot have more than 10% loss in 25 years. That is the standard nowadays that you have to put in if you want to put it in the market. Now here, you are losing the whole thing within probably a month. Everything is gone. Then you have 20%, 30% loss. So you can see that the same thing that makes organic solar cells great also makes it fundamentally, forget about moisture, forget about other things, fundamentally, kinetically complicated or compromised. So what can you do? Of course, there are many things that can be done. One is, of course, you can make it ordered. And what ordering does is that, you see here, the paths are so long that the electron, it's like two rivers going in the opposite direction. And there's a lot of recombination in the path. Yes, they can find their path to the respective contact, but it's just too long. And if you can reduce that recombination when the electrons and holes are going in their separate stream, you can essentially, it's possible to increase the efficiency by a factor of 2. So ordering helps. That is something that lots of people are working on, putting specially inorganic type blends. And of course, you can kinetically arrest it. This is like block copolymers. That's another option, that if you essentially allow it to segregate up to a point, and then it cannot segregate anymore, kinetically arrested, in that case also, you might have longer lifetime. So I'm not saying there's no hope. I'm just saying there's no hope the way we currently view, just put two things, mix it, and allow it to phase segregate. So let me conclude then. I have four simple conclusions. First is the optimization and yield time. People make various types of new organics, new polymers, and they have to always find what is the optimum time. A graduate student will generally do many samples and find what the optimum time is. It turns out that that can be easily predicted. There's nothing much you can do on that because it is simply a tension between percolation and phase segregation, which, as I showed, is a few-line formula, nothing complicated. And therefore, it's not something you can really do much about it. And another thing I said, this process and reliability are correlated. So many times you might want to sell to the market something is slightly less optimized so that when it's in operation, it has more time to phase segregate. That way, actually, it will have more stable performance rather than starting high and then dropping very quickly. Solvent and mixture ratio, I said that percolation says it has to be close to 1. So no point trying to beat it. There's nothing you can do. If you want to make a solar cell that really sells, you have to keep it close to 1:1. Regularized morphology helps. It helps by preventing recombination because the pathways otherwise are too large. But it is always costly. And new polymers with smaller band gap, that is where you get most improvement. These band gaps are just too big. The optimum band gap is on the order of 1.4 eV. Many times these materials have more than 2 eV band gap. And so when you have 2 eV, you have thrown away a lot of photons from the very beginning. So the most important thing, if I had a chance to work on it, I would have liked a new polymer that has lower band gap. But of course, I hear my chemist friends say that that has solubility issues and things are not as simple as electrical engineers think. Okay, so that's all I had. Thank you very much.
You're near the same threshold for shorting out your contacts with the same material.
Yes.
I mean that's another argument I would think for ordered structures versus disordered structures.
Yeah. And as I said, the chemists are of course very clever, and what they do. You see, I didn't talk at all about open circuit voltage. That would be another talk. If I had longer time, I'd have discussed that. What they will put a blocking layer here. And an electron blocking layer and a hole blocking layer. And by putting the blocking layer, what you do, you allow one electron to go out, but the hole cannot go out through the wrong contacts. Because otherwise what would happen that when you shine light, as your forward bias is coming up, a fraction of the light will go through the wrong contact, electron hole. And therefore, your light-induced current will immediately take a nosedive, reducing the open circuit voltage. That is another difference from compared to crystalline solar cells. It doesn't happen in crystalline solar cells. So they generally put a blocking layer. In this case, you don't have to put a blocking layer explicitly, as you said. Yes, please.
You have a very nice, beautiful theory, but your life may be a little more complicated. So I may suspect that in the first talk, you may have three phases, pure C60, pure polymer, and then this intercalated mixture. So I wonder if your conclusions would change. Is it easy to generalize what you do for things where you have three possibilities or more?
Mm-hmm. So in some way, when I talk about red and blue, I am really not talking about, remember, this is a continuous thing. When I solved the Cahn-Hillard equation, at this point in between, it was neither 100% nor 0%. It had this mixed phase. And the important point over there, if you're on the boundaries, if you have mixed phase, that is really very bad. Because in order to get the exciton dissociated, you want to get inside the exciton with the electric field and pull them apart. So your boundaries have to be sharper than the exciton radius. Otherwise, excitons will not even care if there is electric field, right? So therefore, generally, even when you have a continuous phase, third phase, it suppresses exciton dissociation if you have it in the middle. So I'm not immediately sure. First of all, it can be done. Cunningham equation, you can always put another phase. But unless the junction between these donors and acceptors are very sharp, we are defeating the main purpose of making this polymer structure, which is to pull them up out for the first time. Yes, please.
Sorry, I actually missed most of the talk.
Okay.
But for the exothon and the edge, and even if you have a very sharp AMP structure, type 2 pattern alignment, do you think you can still have an exothon and the boundary and the interface, which still have some bounding?
Of course. So that part, again, is all these things that I hid in this. What happens, that the way people view it is there is these different types of exciton. And so once they get separated, the problem exactly is what you said. They still, for a little bit, once they get separated here, they are still very close. Physically, they are still very close. So they are bound. But they cannot go back. So they are bound, but they are bound to follow this sort of hug the trajectory of the two regions. So they will diffuse through these regions. And there is a chance that at that time, it will actually recombine. So therefore, people generalize this, and this is all included. You cannot use simply Onsager's theory for exciton dissociation. You use the Bronze generalization that allows this intermediate phase to account for it. But in that way, you could not, even though when they are free, they could recombine because they are so close to each other, hugging the boundary of the blue and the red. So this is a problem for exciton normal organic solar cells that one has to grapple with no matter what. Please.
When you showed the problem of carrier extraction at the high binding, you drew a graph of the resistance versus an emitting time. How did you get to those values?
How did I get it? I didn't again show that. We do a full three-dimensional calculation of electron hole and exciton transport through the respective contacts. And that immediately explains quite a number of very interesting things. For example, this is the only solar cell where the dark characteristics without light will cross the light characteristics in the presence of light. So many strange things happen because of the three-dimensional flow. So we actually have a full three-dimensional simulation which essentially accounts for separation, generation, separation, and flow and subsequent recombination.
There's no back of the envelope?
No, not. You see, back of the envelope is for physical guiding. The students will do the complicated things. I will think about simple things. Please.
In modeling these phase transformations, is there a distinction between a transformation where it's just a change of structure of the same material versus where it's different materials and they actually have to...
No. As you know, that the free energy, there have been many efforts. This free energy functions dates back to 1960s, early 1960s, 1970s. Since then, there have been many free energy functions to account for this type of... At the end of the day, it changes things, like how much current you will get. If it is a little bit structured, like more crystalline, you will get the current a little bit more because the resistance is a little less. But other than that, in terms of global structure and global conclusion, like one-to-one, these are so robust conclusions that this is very difficult to get out no matter what is done. Right? But of course, the local is efficiency. So when people fight about 8.5 versus 8.9 between a normal paper and a science paper, then of course that 0.4% makes a huge difference. Not correct.
Actually, I don't know. People always get excited about this. In lab variation.
But you are supposed to put the best result.
Between a science paper and a normal paper, if you get a 1% cell, no one cares. Very skeptical.
Please.
So, you know, with the transport modeling that you're doing, you know, the computers are doing,
joking,
right?
I'm joking.
Is that kind of a drift diffusion? I mean, so okay, and so there are some parameters that you have put into these that are kind of adjustable,
absolutely,
phenomenological, right?
True.
And so including the diffusion.
The mobility models are these in this type of material are not. You cannot say. Well, I mean, we put a temperature activated polymer model, but those are of course are all phenomenological.
Yeah.
You're right.
So there's some interesting things you could think about to verify them. But given that model, I wondered if you mentioned that the ordered models can, or ordered morphologies can be more optimal. What's the most optimal morphology given that model? I mean, have you thought about that? I mean, is there using kind of a genetic algorithm or something, given your model, what should it look, what's the best thing?
So there is, it's a very nice question. So he's asking that if this is better than this, is there something most optimal? It turns out that since there are different percolation problem. So one is for the light. The main problem is here that if you put electrode, projected electrodes like this, many times you have light that doesn't get absorbed very, very well. So you have I had a few more slides on the light absorption problem. So because there's a light absorption problem, there's a transport problem, so there are these different trade-offs. So it's very difficult to know what will be the absolute. But of all the ones that I have seen, at the end, probably either something like this or something like this, because both of them are reliable. I think that's the main problem of the field, not having reliability. Rest of the things, actually, it doesn't really matter. It's never going to beat silicon in terms of efficiency. Even the cost, the way silicon cost is dropping, it's very difficult to make an argument unless the reliability problem is solved. So, but I do not know for sure. What. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to have a break.